Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The large protests in Iran are discussed in an interview with Fawaz Gerje, a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics. He talks about what is driving the protesters. He says the economy has been ruined by severe sanctions from the U.S. and Europe, turning Iran into a state of paupers. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Here in Europe, calls for support of the Iranian protesters are becoming louder, although support without military intervention. But what could that look like? So far, there's only been condemnation of the violence against protesters, with the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, among the critical voices.
When a regime can only stay in power through violence, it has de facto reached its end. I believe we're seeing the last days and weeks of this regime. It has no democratic legitimacy through elections. And the population is now rising up. I hope there's an opportunity to peacefully end this conflict. The Mullah regime must accept that.
And let's bring in Fawaz Gerje. He is a renowned professor of international relations at the London School of Economics, specializing in Middle East politics, Islamism, and U.S. foreign policy in the region. Welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining us. What do you think that the regime is thinking when they hear those statements from the German chancellor? Because European leaders have been condemning the crackdown. Do you think that that's enough?
Well, I think what we need to understand is that Iran is facing an existential crisis. This is the most significant threat to the clerics in Tehran since 1979, the revolution that toppled the Shah of Iran. I doubted very much whether the condemnation by European leaders, including the German chancellor, will sway the resolve of the clerics to clamp down against the protesters. Europe has very little influence over Iran, in particular after it reimposed the sanctions against Iran a few months ago. So no, I don't think we're going to see any difference in how Iran responds to the turmoil in the country.
Trump says that Tehran wants talks. Would that be a viable way of halting the violence? And how do you think that pressure is being exerted right now?
Well, I think we know very much that President Trump has been threatening to attack Iran militarily in the past 2 weeks. He has made it very clear. And he has been basically exerting more pressure in the past 75 hours by saying that the Trump administration now is weighing certain emergency plans to attack Iran. And the Iranian leadership has responded publicly by threatening to retaliate against American bases. But behind the scene, the Iranian foreign minister has been in touch, obviously, with Trump's special envoy to Iran, Steve Witkoff. And the Americans have made it very clear that Iran's messages, private messages to the Americans, differ from their public pronouncements. So we have to wait and see. But my take on it is that Iran has a weak hand at this particular moment. Its nuclear program has been dormant since the Americans and the Israelis attacked Iran in June. And, of course, its regional allies, partners, Hezbollah and others, have been weakened a great deal. So what do the Americans want? The Americans do not really care about democracy. And I know you know this. Donald Trump is naturally, he's even turning the United States into a more authoritarian state. They want zero nuclear enrichment in Iran. They want to get rid of Iran's nuclear program and also its ballistic missiles. What Iran really wants is lifting the sanctions, the economic sanctions, so we have to wait and see.
And let's talk a little bit more about that in particular, the economic pressure that is on Iran, because when we're talking about external pressure, we just discussed the American side. The Europeans are discussing more sanctions on Iran. Is that the right move right now, and does it have immediate effect?
Iran is under one of the most severest economic sanctions in history since the end of 1945. Both America and Europe have imposed, really severe punishing sanctions. In fact, the economic sanctions have broken the backbone of the Iranian economy. They're punitive. They have pauperized the Iranian people. In fact, there's a direct relationship between the protests we're seeing and the economic sanctions. So more sanctions won't do because Iran, the Iranian economy is broken. And that's why the only way out of this particular violence and escalation is a diplomatic breakthrough between Iran and the United States. And without addressing the bigger question, Iran's nuclear program and lifting the sanctions, I don't see a way out of this really deadly embrace for Iran.
Favaz Yarjas, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
That interview is from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, France 24. First, how the Greenland press responded to the meeting between J.D. Vance and the foreign ministers of Greenland and Denmark. Mainly in response to Trump's threats of seizing Greenland by military force, many members of NATO are deploying their troops to the island. The foreign ministers were keen to not escalate the situation, but did not appear to think that their meeting had changed Trump's mind. France 24.
Dipti, you're starting with that meeting between U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and the foreign ministers of Denmark and Greenland.
Let's take a look at the Greenlandic press. This is from Sermitsiak, whose editorial team were following that meeting very closely. In their analysis today, they say that the U.S. tried to play Denmark and Greenland off against each other but didn't succeed. They note that one of the positives is that came out of that meeting is that dialogue is continuing, but one of the negatives, or the major negative, is that everyone seems to be sticking to their arguments for the moment.
Denmark has warned of a fundamental disagreement following a meeting with the White House between U.S., Danish and Greenlandic officials. Foreign Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen said the talks with Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio showed potentially intractable differences over the political future of Greenland. After the meeting, Donald Trump reiterated his desire to acquire the Arctic island. Meanwhile, Denmark says it's beefing up military drills and deployment in defense of Greenland in conjunction with NATO allies. France, Sweden, Germany and Norway are among the countries deploying forces. Well, to talk more about this, we can bring in France 24's Dave Keating. Dave, the ongoing military exercises show a united front of Europe.
Yeah, there's been two things that the governments participating in this operation have wanted to stress. One is that this is only an initial mission, that is a reconnaissance mission to prepare the way for a larger mission to come. So even though the numbers are quite small in terms of the troops, they are preparing the way for a larger deployment, and that will likely involve more countries. We're hearing that Canada might be involved. Also, possibly the UK. There's one British advisor participating in the current mission, reportedly, that suggests that there might be British troops coming, although the government has not confirmed that. The other thing that these governments have been keen to stress is that this is a NATO-allied mission. They, in all of their statements, they have not said anything about this being an EU mission or even a European mission, because they're trying to say to the US, we're doing exactly what you are asking us to do, which is to send resources to Greenland to protect it from a possible Russian or Chinese invasion. However, given the context, it's quite clear that this deployment is actually happening to protect Greenland from an American invasion. Now, it's not the idea that these forces will be able to actually militarily resist such a U.S. invasion. It's meant as a deterrent. The more European nationalities that are there as soldiers in Greenland at the time of a U.S. invasion, the more the U.S. will know that it will trigger a wider conflict, not just with Denmark, but with Europe as a whole. Now, we haven't had much in the way of a reaction to this deployment from the U.S. government. We did have President Trump late yesterday mocking the deployment, saying that it's just additional dog sleds. We haven't had any kind of angry response or any response agreeing with this line that this is doing what the Americans have asked to do. And as far as we can tell, it didn't come up in that meeting at the White House yesterday between the Danish and Greenlandic foreign ministers and the U.S. vice president, at least based on what they said afterwards.
All right. So do you think Europe can still change Trump's mind on this issue?
Well, that was certainly the hope of the Danish and Greenlandic foreign ministers when they went to Washington yesterday. However, you could tell from their body language after the meeting that this meeting did not go well. It was a hastily arranged meeting. They were by themselves, not with their U.S. counterparts, speaking in front of a cocktail reception table with a tablecloth on it. In terms of optics, it didn't really project strength, to say the least. Now, the backstory of this is interesting. Reportedly, the foreign ministers only wanted to meet with their counterpart, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, but then the U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance insisted on being at the meeting. That prompted expectations that we were going to see another Oval Office ambush dust-up like we saw between J.D. Vance and President Zelensky last year. Now, in the end, there was no Oval Office spray with reporters where that was possible. That may have been because the Greenlandic and Danish prime ministers refused to do any such opportunity. We don't know. We don't know the exact reasons why they spoke by themselves, why there was no joint appearance, but certainly they would have been keen to avoid any kind of opportunity for the U.S. vice president to grandstand in front of the cameras. Now, in those comments, you could tell that the Danish foreign minister, Lars Rasmussen, was very keen to not escalate the situation. He has been pretty blunt in the past. You could see from how tightly controlled he was that he was really trying to stick to a line that was given to him by the government in order not to escalate the situation. But then during the Q&A, he said, I think in a kind of unguarded moment, that they could not come to the same page and that Donald Trump was apparently intent on, quote, conquering Greenland. I think that was an unguarded moment. However, that is what led all the headlines after the meeting. So clearly, after this meeting, Denmark has not come out thinking that it's made any progress in terms of negotiations. They have set up this working group that's supposed to talk about these issues to come, but you could see from the faces of the foreign ministers that they're not really expecting any breakthrough anytime soon, at least until the U.S. president maybe gets sidetracked with something else. But based on Rasmussen's context, on what he said during that press availability, it's clear that they see that Donald Trump's obsession with Greenland at the moment is the main problem, and no amount of negotiation is going to overcome that easily.
All right, Dave Keating, thank you very much for that analysis. Dave Keating, our Brussels correspondent.
That press review and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, also most podcast sites. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. Researchers are off on a mission attempting to mine rare earth minerals from mud on the deep sea ocean floor, which is extremely dangerous to ocean life. China's export earnings have not been hurt by Trump's tariffs. There has been a dangerous escalation in the war on Ukraine following the failed drone attack on Putin's residence. NHK Japan.
Japanese researchers have set sail on a mission to attempt to mine rare earths from the seabed at extreme depths. Their work has taken on extra urgency in light of fears about fewer of the materials coming from China. The scientific drilling ship Chikyu left Shimizu Port in Shizuoka Prefecture on Monday. It's heading to waters about 150 kilometers southeast of Minami Torishima Island inside Japan's exclusive economic zone. The vessel is owned by the Japan Agency for Marine Earth Science and Technology. The work is part of a cabinet office project. Scientists have found that the mud of the area's seabed, 6,000 meters down, has high concentrations of rare earths that are vital to high-tech industries. The researchers plan to spend about 20 days testing newly developed pipes and mining equipment. They're scheduled to return to port on February 14th.
We're hoping to overcome all the technical challenges after we spent 7 years on development.
China said last week it's tightening export controls to Japan for what Beijing calls dual-use items with both military and civilian applications. There are concerns that the measure may include rare earth metals.
The tariffs of President Trump have done little to hurt China's export earnings. Chinese exports in 2025 marked a second consecutive year of increase, leading the country to a record high trade surplus of nearly $1.2 trillion. Chinese customs authorities announced on Wednesday that exports rose 5.5% in dollar terms from the previous year to more than $3.77 trillion. U.S.-bound shipments plunged 20% due to tariffs imposed by the White House. But the decline was made up for by increases in exports to Southeast Asia by 13.4% and Europe by 8.4%. China's imports, however, remained flat through 2025 from the previous year on the back of sluggish domestic demand. And this helped push the trade surplus higher. For the month of December, exports to the U.S. plummeted 30% from a year earlier, reflecting a prolonged slump even after Trump lowered additional tariffs on China in November last year. Meanwhile, in trade with Japan through December, China's exports and imports rose 5.3% and 3% respectively, despite a souring of ties between the two countries. Concerns are mounting at the United Nations over what diplomats describe as a dangerous escalation of the war in Ukraine, with Russia's use of a new ballistic missile among the latest attacks. U.S. Deputy Ambassador to the UN, Tammy Bruce, spoke Monday at an Emergency Security Council meeting. She said Russia used an Oreshnik missile just as peace talks are gaining momentum.
We are closer to a deal now than at any point since the war began. Despite this, Russia launched more attacks on Ukraine. This constitutes another dangerous and inexplicable escalation of this war.
Ukraine's permanent representative warned that the weapon can carry a nuclear payload and said it represents a new level of escalation. Russia's UN representative said recent strikes were in response to an attack by Ukraine on a Russian president's official residence and civilian infrastructure.
Those reports are from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. And NHK may be found at most podcast sites, Spotify, Apple, you name it. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could help support this show, like listeners in Redway in Healdsburg, California, and Northumberland, UK did this week, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for the donations. They're essential for the weekly production and website fees for this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations across the world. And if you are listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. President Maduro sent out his first message through his son after being kidnapped and held in a U.S. prison. United Nations Secretary General Guterres warned Benjamin Netanyahu that he could take Israel to the International Court of Justice for their actions against UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agencies for Palestine. Israel is ready to begin construction that will split the occupied West Bank into two. Trump announced a 25% tariff on any country conducting business with Iran. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has sent his first public message from prison in the United States in the empire after being kidnapped along with his wife, Celia Flores. Through his son, Nicolas Maduro Guerra, he assured that he is well, he is strong, and he asked his supporters not to be saddened by the U.S. legal proceedings against him. The information was released in a video in which Maduro Guerra conveyed the message that he received from his father and his father's lawyers. In the recording, in the video, he stated that his father remains in good spirits despite being kidnapped and detained in a federal facility in Brooklyn, New York. The president's son recalled that lawyers assured him and the family that Nicolas Maduro expressly asked his followers not to be saddened. He said, "The lawyers have told us he is strong, that he is not sad, and that we are fine. We are fighters." In that same message, he described his father as a leader who they could not break. He said a man that they could not defeat by any other means had to use disproportionate force, kidnapping him. But that did not defeat him. He is strong, and we must be strong. He also spoke about the current situation in the country and said, "We're going to preserve life, we're going to preserve power, and we are going to preserve the revolution. It's up to us to move forward on the path to keep democracy alive, to maintain the path of Hugo Chavez." United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that he could take his country, Israel, to the International Court of Justice if it does not repeal laws targeting the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, and return its seized assets and property. In a January 8th letter, just now being revealed, to Netanyahu, Guterres said that the UN cannot remain indifferent to actions taken by Israel, which are in direct contravention of the obligations of Israel under international law. They must be reversed without delay. Israel's parliament passed a law in October last year, in 2024, banning UNRWA, the United Nations Refugee Agency for Palestinian Refugees, from operating in Israel, prohibiting it, and prohibiting Israeli officials from having any contact with the agency. It then amended the law last month to ban electricity or water to any UNRWA facilities of the United Nations. Israeli authorities also seized occupied East Jerusalem's offices last month. The United Nations considers East Jerusalem occupied by Israel. It is occupied by Israel. Israel considers all of Jerusalem to be part of their country, their promised land. Guterres has said that the UNRWA is an integral part of the United Nations, highlighted that Israel remains under an obligation to accord UNRWA and its personnel the privileges and immunities specified in the 1946 Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations. The convention states that the premises of the United Nations shall be inviolable. Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, dismissed the letter to Netanyahu from the United Nations Secretary General. He said, "We're not fazed by the Secretary General's threats," he said in a post on Tuesday. "Instead of dealing with the undeniable involvement of UNRWA personnel in terrorism, the Secretary General chooses to threaten Israel. This is not defending international law. This is defending an organization marred by terrorism. Israel has long sought the dissolution of UNRWA, which was created by the United Nations General Assembly in 1949 following the war surrounding the founding of Israel. It has since provided aid, health care, education to millions of Palestinians in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. Israel has alleged that a dozen of the agency's employees were involved in an Hamas-led attack on southern Israel back in October 2023. In response to that attack, Israel launched a devastating genocidal war, ethnic cleansing, against the Palestinian people of Gaza, killing more than 71,400 at the present count, according to the Gaza's health authorities. The United Nations has said that 9 UNRWA staff have been involved in the Hamas-led attack, and they've been fired. But the United Nations has also promised to investigate all accusations made by Israel and has repeatedly asked Israel for evidence, which it has not been provided. Israel has no evidence because the evidence doesn't exist. According to a UN report, Israel's war on Gaza has killed 382, that's 382 UN employees in Gaza, the highest number of UN casualties since the world body was founded in 1945. Israel has cleared the final hurdle to begin construction on the E1 settlement project near Jerusalem that would split the occupied West Bank in two. The project has been under consideration for more than 2 decades, but had not been put forward until it could be done without U.S. pressure. Meanwhile, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said that the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank are facing apartheid. It's the first time that a UN human rights chief has used the term apartheid. Volker Turk said, whether accessing water, food, school, rushing to a hospital, visiting family or friends, harvesting olives, every aspect of life for Palestinians in the West Bank is controlled and curtailed by Israel's discriminatory laws. Israel is violating international law requiring states to prohibit and eradicate racial segregation and apartheid. And as the Trump administration weighs Iran strikes, Tehran says it is prepared for war but ready to negotiate. Trump is expected to be briefed on options, including launching strikes inside Iran and offensive cyber attacks. Earlier this week, Trump announced a 25% tariff on countries that conduct business with Iran, including China, India, Turkey, and Pakistan.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well most of the time at radio8c.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radio8c.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.